want one less decision to make in postpartum, Coterie is like the autopilot button for diapers. They're hypoallergenic, ultra-absorbent, and made without any of the junk. We love Coterie because clean ingredients on your baby's most sensitive parts is super important. Best part? You can text them when you need to size up or delay your next box. Postpartum is wild. Coterie just makes it feel a little lighter. You can use our exclusive code VBAC20, that is VBAC20, at checkout to make postpartum a little easier with an extra 20% off your order.
Hello, women of strength. You guys, it's summer. It's hot outside and it feels so good. I really wish that that was my reality in this very moment of recording, though, because it's not hot outside, it's snowing outside. So I'm looking forward to the day that this episode is airing so I can feel the sun on my face as I'm taking a walk, re-listening to this episode. You guys, we have our friend Christy. Hello, Christy.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh, thank you for being here. She is from Mississippi, correct?
Yes.
Yes, and she is a retired nurse, stay-at-home mom of four kiddos, and has been pregnant or breastfeeding, or kind of both, since 2017. That is a lot. She became a pregnancy and birth nerd while pregnant with her third, who then made her a VBAC nerd. And I love that you're a VBAC nerd, and I love that you have been nursing and serving your babies and giving birth and also serving the community, and then now with your family, doing so many amazing things, and now here sharing your stories to empower women that are coming after you.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited.
I'm really excited. You guys, we are replacing our review today with a topic that is one that I think is important to talk about, because I see it all the time in our community. I see it all the time here just within my own doula company in Utah, where people travel or feel that they need to travel to a further distance than normal to have a VBAC, or just even just to have a better experience. Sometimes it's not even for VBAC, right? But a lot of my clients who travel are specifically traveling to have a VBAC, or they know that cesarean rates in their area are really high, and so they're traveling to avoid the unnecessary. So Christy did travel. She did make some travel plans. So I thought it'd be fun today to talk a little bit about the logistics of traveling and what that looks like, because I know that sometimes, honestly, over 30 minutes can feel daunting, right? Or too scary or not possible. So tell me a little bit more about your decision to travel. And we talked about this a little bit before we started recording. She technically traveled to another state because she passed the borderline. and it was an hour and a half. Is that what you said? An hour and a half away. Okay. So let's talk about, we're going to dial actually all the way back. One, what made you decide to travel an hour and a half?
Well, where we had our two and three babies and one of the C-sections, they just don't allow any sort of VBAC at that hospital. And they don't have a NICU. We live in a very small town, but Mississippi's all small towns. So it's also a regional hospital in a small town. So it's kind of an odd little thing. And my husband works at that hospital. He's there and knows like the CMO well, and even asked him specifically, like, can we sign something that just says we have a VBAC here? And, you know, they were not interested in that. So because of that, there are a lot of people here who have traveled to Memphis, in particular in Tennessee, to see this one particular OB. And he is kind of like the VBAC guy in our area and really just kind of this region. People go from several states to see him. So whenever I had the C-section, I knew if we were going to have another one, I didn't want to have another C-section if I could avoid it. So started researching and just asking around, and everyone that I asked was saying the same guy, same OB in Memphis. And so never really considered another option. We have family there. I grew up there. So I'm very familiar with the area, and I don't know, it didn't seem too scary. And you know, I didn't know how fast labor was going to be this time around, but with my first two that were also vaginal births, I was induced both times. And so, I don't know, I just never really thought about it being too fast to get there or not working. And our family lives an hour on the other side of Memphis. And so when we had appointments, I would just meet family there and, you know, they'd hang out with the kids or we'd make a day of it. And it really wasn't as bad as it sounded like when I told people that I was driving, you know, to Memphis to the doctor. But unfortunately here, it's kind of common, you know, people go here. You can also, like, there's a place a little bit closer that people have had VBACs, but they just, I would definitely say that they're just more VBAC tolerant. Yeah. It was really important to me to find someone who would look me in the eyes and say, you know, we can do this.
We can do this.
You know, you can have the birth that you want and we'll make it happen. And so I chose that over just the closer, more tolerant practice of the hospital. And also closer to our family. So it made sense for them to be able to be there and be a part of it.
So that totally makes sense. You're like, no, I want to go to the more supportive place. Yes, I might have to drive a little bit, but there's also a lot of logistics in labor that you have to work out. And with you of having a vaginal birth before, you did have a little bit higher risk of it going quicker. And a lot of the times with VBAC, just in general, we haven't had a previous vaginal birth. And so it does sound crazy and daunting, but usually there's a lead in labor and you have some time to travel, or you can work out some logistics of, you know, staying in an Airbnb or a hotel. I know a lot of our clients here in Utah will find a hotel or an Airbnb or some sort of short-term rental. I had one that they were 4 hours away and they ended up driving their camper and stayed in a camper at like an RV park. Yeah. And so then they were close and they had their kids and they were like, yeah, we're just going to do this thing. And it always works out. But okay, so you figured it out. You kind of worked out the logistics. And we're going to hear more about the travel in a second. I don't want to get too deep into that. But what about like insurance? Did that change financially? Was that really impactful on you?
Thankfully, that wasn't. Our insurance, my husband's company is actually based out of Memphis.
Oh, okay.
I was at one of his hospitals in Memphis too. So his company's based there, but it's Blue Cross. So they take it everywhere, which was wonderful. You know, I was still it was a Baptist hospital. There's a Baptist hospital here that where I had two babies, and then there's a Baptist there. So it just, that was not an issue, thankfully.
Yeah.
But that was one reason why I steered away from, there were several like midwifery practices, but they didn't accept insurance or our insurance or, you know, and we do have really good insurance. It's really hard to say, sure, I'll pay out of pocket for all that, but, you know, I might not have had to otherwise. But also, you know, it was more simple doing it that way for us to just pick a practice and find somewhere that, you know, that we could still afford, which was wonderful and such a blessing. It didn't have to be an issue. And he, the OB that I picked, also was in our network. All that worked out. It was just like any of the other ones. So it, thankfully, even though we were across, you know, state lines, all that, we did have to pick a different hospital last minute. Memphis had a lot of hospitals, and there was some sort of negotiation, I guess you could say, with some of the insurance policies. Or so last minute, they did say, you can't go to this one, you've got to go to this one. But thankfully,
it was,
you know, he could go to all of them, so it wasn't really that big of a deal.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, okay, I love that you're talking about that too. Like, you want to make sure that if you're traveling, you know the hospitals that your providers have or your provider has privileges at. It's because if it does go faster, you need to get to a closer hospital and things like that. There are a lot of logistics to think about there. So really quick, we want to get into the story, of course, but thinking about insurance financially, is it something that's doable? Sometimes it sounds like it won't be doable. And then you dive in and you're like, oh, actually, we could totally do this. Setting up dual care. You can do dual care where you can do a lot of visits in your hometown prenatally. And then you can do like some virtual visits with your provider further away, but then you're established within your home care or your home base, I want to call it home base, right close to you. And then you can travel, you know, a little further or go to your visits a little closer to the end of your pregnancy. So again, time, the support, you want to make sure that you have the support. Of course, we talk about this all the time here. I could talk about it and I'm blue in the face. Support is key. You need a supportive provider. And then, yeah, just kind of all the other logistics of the day labor happens, if you have other kids, things like that. So know it's possible and there are things that you need to work out, but if it's something that you want to consider, you know, maybe consider it. We just had someone drive 5 hours and they stayed in an Airbnb for a couple weeks before she had their baby and it worked out and they had the most beautiful experience. And she's like, I know for a fact, if I would have stayed in my hometown, that wouldn't have happened. It just wouldn't have happened. So you just gotta kind of dive in, see what works for you guys. And yeah, if you are considering traveling and you have any more questions, feel free to email us at info@thevbacklink.com. All right.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
Okay, thank you for chatting with me about all of those logistics. Mm-hmm. I think it's a really fun thing to talk about because a lot of people want to, and then it seems so daunting that they just like refrain from doing it when it actually might be something they can do or want to do once they dive in. So, yeah. Okay, well, let's share your stories.
Yes. Well, I know it is odd. I did have 2 vaginal births prior to my C-section. And so for me, you know, I had my first when I was like 24 and I was a nurse at the time and we were in Nashville and it's a very like healthcare centered city. So I was just very trusting, I guess, of my provider and just the experience as a whole and didn't really like take a lot of that on myself. I just was like, I'll show up, it'll be fine. And thankfully it was, but I had preeclampsia and had to be induced very late. I was like 39 weeks, but somehow still managed to have a vaginal birth. It was, you know, I loved it. It was a great experience. Now looking back, magnesium and Pitocin was miserable and I just didn't know any better because that's all that I had experienced. And, you know, I wanted to have like an unmedicated birth then, but I was kind of like, oh, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, and with the Pitocin and the magnesium, after about 12 hours, tapped out on that. And that epidural was the sweetest thing I think I've ever experienced in my life. No bad feelings towards that. And, you know, my second, we moved twice. I saw 3 different OBs. The last move was like, I think 34 weeks pregnant. And so, you know, I just didn't really research a lot. I didn't know that I had options or that, you know, I could say something that I want to do. But same thing, I had a wonderful experience with her being born. I was 42 weeks, had to be induced. It was smooth. I got to pull her out myself. It was wonderful. And so then like COVID happened and I think everybody kind of started questioning like, what are we putting into our bodies? And maybe we do have a choice in our healthcare decisions and just all these things that I just had never really acknowledged before. So that whole pregnancy, ironically, I was just headfirst in all the things, reading all the books and so excited for kind of taking responsibility for that pregnancy and birth. And I was staying with my same OB. He's old school, but he liked that I cared about that kind of stuff. And so he did give me a lot of options and things that I feel like most people maybe didn't get. However, transverse lie, whenever I was 37 weeks, went into labor with him and he was head down, went into labor and went in for like, just to see for my 37 week appointment the next day, knowing I was in labor. And they were like, well, you're 4 centimeters dilated, but this baby's, you know, completely transverse. There were hands and feet, you know, that he was feeling whenever he checked me. And, but thankfully he was like, let's get you to the hospital. We'll try to turn this baby, even though I was in active labor. So he turned him for an hour and a half, and that sweet boy just kept going right back up over and over and over again. So it just was not meant to be. And, you know, that is one thing that I held on to that I needed. That C-section was, that was a big deal. And, you know, a long time ago, that might not have been a great experience. And I was, you know, so I'm very thankful that that's an option and that I didn't feel cheated out of it by like the healthcare system. It was just not meant to be. But my OB made sure and told me then, like, I kept everything where if you want to have another baby, you don't have to have another C-section, you know, go somewhere else, do something else. So as soon as he was born, I feel like I was listening to this podcast. I was like, we all do, you know, we just dive in and we want to hear someone talk about the fact that the feelings we have are valid or that, you know, yes, our babies are healthy and yes, they're here, but that was not what we wanted. And that was also my COVID birth, which that was the only one that I had during COVID. And, you know, I love having family at the hospital. I know that's not always everybody's thing. I love everybody there. I want my grandparents, my parents, everybody, you know, it's a party at the hospital. We always wait to find out gender. So it's just so fun and exciting. And so I felt like double robbed of that experience. And so I was just ready to just, you know, move past that. And, you know, I emailed all the spinning babies people and was like, was there something I could have done? Like, and they got that. They were so sweet. And they were like, there's really nothing you can do at that point. Like, it just, you know, it happens. And sometimes it just does. But I read all about positioning and not reclining and all these things that I didn't pay as much attention to during my pregnancy. So I waited the longest time I had to get pregnant again because I was a little anxious about, you know, the whole process. But, you know, as soon as I hit that second trimester, I was sitting on the floor, crossing my legs, you know, like not crossing my legs and not leaning back. A little crazy about it. My husband was like, you can sit on the couch. No, I can't. I'm not sitting on that couch. Like, I'm going to sit here on my yoga ball or, you know, I really was trying all the things. And also, just like I had with my son, listening to all the hypnobirthing tracks, and that was so helpful for me. And like, even just to process what had happened before and to not bring that anxiety into like this pregnancy and all this. And it really helped too, having the OB that I picked in Memphis, knowing that like, if I did need a C-section, there was a reason. And that gave me a confidence that I felt like I could kind of put my mind at ease of not worrying about that. Because if it did happen, there was a reason and that's okay. And, you know, wasn't meant to be. And my doula that I hired, she was actually in his office, which was awesome. She's VBAC certified and he's, again, like the VBAC guy. So he had someone who's there and ready and pelvic floor therapist there to help you through your, you know, all of it. It's a fabulous office. They have childcare while you're waiting for your appointments. But when I talked to my doula, and she had had C-sections before, it was so helpful because in one of our meetings, and this is something I tell everyone, I told her exactly what I wanted if I needed a C-section, you know, who I wanted with me or with baby if we had to be separated and what options I wanted. And she talked to our OB and like made sure that there were things that we could do and told me the things that weren't going to be possible. And I had a little bit of a plan. And then I never talked about it again. I said, now you know what I want. I don't want to talk about it anymore. I don't want to plan for it or really think about it. And honestly, I was really able to do that. And I'm very thankful. And she was so helpful in ensuring me that in the event that that happens, I know what you want, but we don't have to, let's spend time talking about how we want it to happen, you know, the things that we're excited for. So, you know, it was very exciting for me going into that pregnancy. And I had a confidence that not necessarily it was going to happen. I really hoped it would. And I wasn't too worried, but just that it was going to work out. You know, whatever that looked like, I was okay with it. That, you know, this redemption baby, as my husband kept calling it, was going to be a successful thing, whatever that looked like. But, you know, it was. So we uncomplicated pregnancy. Thankfully, everything went smooth. And, you know, kind of as you mentioned with the traveling, he was great to, you know, there's several appointments kind of between like your anatomy scan and your gestational diabetes when you can already feel baby move. He was like, don't come. You don't need to come for these. You know, if you need something, call me, but you don't need to come. And kind of those the same thing, like after that, until you're, you know, to where they are checking for, like, he just was like, you don't need to come for all these appointments. So we skipped several, which as a fourth time mom, that didn't make me anxious. I knew at that point when I needed something, you know, but we made it all the way up to 37 weeks, and that I had my group B test done and I was positive. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of upset. I was positive with my son too. And I was kind of upset about it, because like, man, that means I'm going to have to get to the hospital, you know, when I go into labor. That stinks. You know, I really wanted to maybe labor at home some. And ironically, that saved us from having a baby on the interstate. So I'm very thankful for that group B diagnosis. But at 37 weeks, I was like a centimeter dilated. And I did prefer for them to check me. I know some people don't like that. But knowing that I had an hour and a half to drive, I at least wanted, I know that that's not a great indicator, but it tells you a little bit, you know. So I did have them check me at that appointment. And I was like a centimeter and the head was down. That's all I cared about. Like, I want to know that there's a head where there's supposed to be a head. And at the following appointment, which was 38 weeks, I was 2 centimeters. I was so excited. I was like, well, things are working, you know, we're doing something, we're getting somewhere. And you know, this doctor too, he was willing to induce at 42 weeks. He was going to let me go to 42 weeks. Again, assuming everything was
good,
swimmingly, which, you know, love that. And the day after that 38-week appointment, it was Good Friday, and my parents were coming into town. We have like a rental here, and we were going to be flipping it for the next people to come. And we got in the car as the whole family. Thankfully, all of our bags were packed, and not 100 feet out of our driveway, my water broke, which I've never had that experience outside of the hospital. So that was absolutely wild. And that's never started any of my labors. You know, I've never had that experience. And it is fun to, like, on the last one, have it like the movies, you know, because that's that's what you always see or hear about. So that was very fun. You know, got to yell at my husband, my water broke, which is just a blast. We turned the car around, I got a towel, and we just drove straight to Memphis, because again, I knew that I needed to get there to start that antibiotic. The kids were in the car with us. My parents are behind us. It was the most perfect scenario. Kind of like you're saying with the, you know, people who get there before, it worked out so perfectly. Mm-hmm. I can't describe it. So they followed us to Memphis. It was Good Friday, so there were no inductions. Nobody wanted to be induced. So I walked straight through triage. My water broke at 3, like almost on the dot. And we got to the hospital right around 4:30 and went into triage. They tested. She almost didn't test me because there was so much fluid. She was like, this is, you know, yes, your water broke. Every time I would laugh in the car, more would come. And I was checking on like the Freya app, you know, like timing contractions. I didn't realize I was having contractions until after my water broke, but they weren't bad, but I was timing them anyway. And it did say you're in active labor, go to the hospital, even though they were not intense at all. So I thought, this is not real, you know.
Yeah.
I was fine. I wasn't listening to, you know, we were just talking and playing. There was maybe one or two contractions on the drive that I stopped talking. But it really, you know, not bad at all. I was really assuming we were going to have a long night, you know, that we would have a baby the next day is kind of what I was thinking. I walked into triage, got through there, got a room at like 5 o'clock, and was sitting in our room. The kids came in.
You know what I tell every VBAC mom, you guys? Let people help. It is so important. In the postpartum life, we need help, and we can let products help too. Postpartum brain is a thing. I couldn't remember sometimes the last time I showered, let alone what size diaper we were on. That's why I love Coterie. Their diapers are free of all the stuff you don't want on your baby's skin, like fragrances, dyes, parabens, and they're honestly so soft, it's wild. But my favorite feature is that you can manage your subscription by text. Need a new size? Done. Need to skip a shipment? Easy. It's not on an app. It's not a login that you have to remember. It's a literal text. When you're postpartum, that matters because everything else can feel like a lot. This doesn't have to. Get Coterie in your life today with code VBAC20 for an extra 20% off your order. That is VBAC20 for 20% off your order. Check out the link in the show notes.
And all three of them were in there, and they're, you know, our oldest had just turned 6, and then they were 4 and 2, and they had all their colors and trucks and, you know, all the things, and they just played in our room, and nobody cared. I didn't know that that was allowed, but I didn't ask any questions, and it was just a sweet little moment that I didn't know I needed just to have them all in. Again, I was not dealing with terrible pains or anything, and my doula got there, and, you know, our family was there to kind of keep the kids, but we were just hanging out with them for a little bit, kind of as our last little family of five moment. And I also was sad because I really wanted them to be able to be there, you know, right after baby was born, to be the first ones to meet baby and to kind of like announce and all that stuff. And I was thinking, oh, they're going to be asleep. It'll have to be tomorrow, you know, just kind of processing all that. And I ended up getting on the ball and kind of like bouncing around on there. And whenever I would, the contractions were like 4 minutes apart, and I needed my husband to kind of have his fingers in my spine, like on either side of my spine. And I don't normally like to be touched when I'm in pain. And so I had specifically told my doula, don't touch me. But that is exactly what I wanted, which I think is so funny. Like, we think we know what you're going to want, you know, and it's not. Like, I didn't want music. The thought of like music playing, I was like, I don't want more noise. Like, no, this is fine. Just enjoy the quiet, you know. And they were, you know, they would get kind of intense. And I remember looking on the screen, which, you know, you never should do, and like looking at everybody else's labors. And I'm like, they're so much further along than me. Or, you know, that contraction didn't go very high. That was painful. And, you know, then family was just like in and out. We ended up sending the kids out around like a little before 6, like just letting them play with us and hang out. And they went to the waiting room with my parents, and my mom came down, and my husband's parents came in, and, you know, cousins and all the people.
And the party you wanted, right?
Okay, an absolute party. I love a party at the hospital. And everybody was just in and out saying hey and, you know, wishing us luck. And during contraction, sometimes I would have to stop talking, but I still felt very in control. And again, assuming we're in for a long night. And at like 6:45, my husband's parents left. We took a little selfie. I was on the ball and they left. And I said, after that, I'm kind of done with people now. Y'all wait in the waiting room. I'll let you know if, you know, anything happens. And again, like, I'm thinking, and I might not have said this, when I got in, I was 5 centimeters dilated and 80% of face when I got to the hospital. Oh. I don't think I said
that. No, I don't think you did. Yeah.
So I knew I was 5 centimeters, but that's still only halfway, you know, and I was already 2 centimeters at least. So it's like, I don't know, you know, it's going to be a while. And around right after they left, like 6:45, I was like, I need to go to the bathroom. And my nurse kind of heard me, and she said, like, do you need to pee? And I lied and said yes, because again, I'm a nurse. I know, and I've had babies. I know when you feel like you need to poop, that means there's a baby coming. But I was again thinking, there's no way, that's not what it is. I actually have to poop, is, you know, what your brain tells you. And went to the bathroom and just sat there for a second and had a contraction. Because my husband wasn't there, it was more painful because I didn't have that counter pressure. And I remember thinking, I've got 3.5 minutes. I'll be fine. And another one. And then I was like, oh, that's weird. And then another one. That's when it all started hitting me. I was like, oh, no. And like, I knew I was in transition. But again, my head was telling me there's no way. You know, you're 5 centimeters. Even if you dilated a centimeter an hour, you're only 7 centimeters, you know.
Right.
So I got out of the bathroom, and everybody kind of looked at me and kind of knew. And my doula had set the ball on the bed because I was on the ground with the ball. And she was like, why don't, you know, after you labor for a minute on the toilet, come back in here and you can lay over the ball just for a new position.
Yeah.
We already had that set up. And I walked in the room and I was like, I want someone to check me. Like, I know it's only, I just want someone to check me, because if I am not about to have a baby, I need an epidural 10 minutes ago. And everybody kind of started rushing in there, and I thought, okay, they must know, you know, this must be really happening. And I got on the bed and they were like, okay, let's check you. Just lay down for just a second so we can check you. Yeah. And I tried to lay down on my back and screamed at them and was like, nope, not doing it, not doing it. And turned around kind of like on all fours with my head against the headboard. And I was like, you can check me right here. I'm not moving. Like, I cannot move from this. And I heard my nurse just say, go ahead and call him. Like, she knew that this baby was.
Yeah.
And by this point, it was like 7 p.m. I got in there at like 7 p.m.
Wow.
And when the nurse like checked me like at 7:05, and she was like, you're 9.5 centimeters dilated, and but you're at zero station. Mm-hmm. So, and when I got there, it was at -3.
So baby's come down.
Baby had come down, but was not all the way there. And the sweet residents who had to run in there to help, because, you know, my doctor wasn't there yet, were telling the nurse that I couldn't push yet. They were like, don't let her push. Don't let her push. Mm-hmm. And this sweet nurse, Callie, a wonderful little angel, turned around and snapped at this baby resident and said, this is her fourth baby. She can push whenever she feels like she needs to push. You know, that mm-hmm. she's not going to tire herself out. She'll be
mm-hmm.
fine.
Mm-hmm.
So I was pushing, and I started pushing, I guess, around like 7:10. And I couldn't, I was like, I have to. But I remember just thinking, if I know I can push with my girls, I pushed them out very quickly. But I was like, if you can see ahead, just somebody tell me that there's a head there and I will get this baby out. Just tell me that, you know, that I can, that I'm able to, because it is that feeling of relief when you finally can, you know, like it's almost over. And I was at the same time very vocal and during these contractions. And I, at one point, had told my husband, who was right there at my head, I was like, I cannot do this. I cannot do this. And I'm just saying over and over, I can't do this. And my husband, you know, you think of like all the birth mantras that you, you know, say, you're going to say all this stuff and what you want to hear. He was in my ear, and he does not swear ever. Like, he does not. And he just told me, you are the toughest MF-er in this place. You're going to do this. And I was, it was all I needed to hear. Like, all those sweet birth mantras are, that's what I need. I was like, I am. And like, I'm an ex-athlete. Like, that was all I needed, was for somebody to tell me that. And from then on, I was like, you're right. I can totally do this. This is fine. And that's, you know, funny, but my favorite part of the whole experience was just that, you know, because it shocked me into remembering that I can do this.
Yes.
And so I started pushing, and that's like 7:10-ish around there. And the little baby residents were telling me that, because my OB had said, you can push however you want. As long as there's no like medical reason why we need to do something different, do whatever feels right. And that is what felt right to me. That hands and knees like hunched over the back of the bed is the only thing that felt like any sort of relief. And when I was doing that, the little resident said, as I was like, baby's head had crowned, you know, said, you know, Dr. Pedraza does let his patients do this, but we're just not trained for this, and you need to turn around. And same nurse snapped back at him and said, we know what we're doing. She'll be fine. And she like leaned over. She said, you better do this fast. I was like, I'm trying. Like, I know. And so with all we had, pushed, you know, two more times, and there was baby at 7:19. And it was just like the most wild 20 minutes of my life. Like, I don't think anything could compare to, you know, walking out of a bathroom thinking, if I want an epidural because I'm done, to holding a baby. And my doctor missed it. He was 8 minutes away and did not make it.
Ah,
it was Good Friday. So he was there, but he came in right after she was born, and, you know, I got to hold her, and we did the skin to skin, and my husband got to tell me it was a girl, and we were so excited, and we had our, you know, 3-second cry where it's like just the sweetest thing in the world. But because it was so fast, contractions didn't stop. They just kept on going. And so I was like, what happened to this relief I hear about? Like, what in the world? Like, this is still going. And my placenta had a hard time coming out. So my doctor had gotten there at that point and kind of helped with the placenta. And later learned that that's, I guess, more common in those faster labors. The just takes a minute. And as with that as well, our daughter, she was breathing, and she had kind of made some noises, but she was not in that birth canal for very long. And she had a lot of fluid in her lungs. And so they waited and waited and waited for about like 10 minutes. Just, you know, she was doing okay. And then finally they're like, okay, we need to suction her. So they took her over and got all that gunk and, you know, fluid out of her lungs, and then got her right back to me. But we did have a little bit of a break there that while we waited, and it kind of lined up with when I needed to get the placenta out anyway. So but we did have to work to get that placenta. Nobody talks about that. That was, I was not prepared for really having to work for that. But, you know, after a little bit, all the contractions did actually stop. And, you know, but it was just the most wild thing. And I think it's so funny to me how those fast labors, and I've heard people talk about it, you know, on your podcast, like it, you have to process them differently because, you know, I had all of these expectations. I thought I was going to listen to this peaceful music and we were going to have time to set up the essential oils and the string lights. Like there was time for nothing because the last, you know, right when it got to a point where I was like, okay, like let's start getting in, like settling in, it was over.
It was go time. Yeah.
It was done. Like, and so I kind of had to process and like, I know it sounds silly, but kind of grieve the like sweet black and white photo. Mm. Oh, how beautiful, like experience of birth that I thought I would have or planned for, whatever. But at the same time, everything I wanted happened. Like everything, our families were all there. The kids, like right after she was born, got to come in and meet her because it was 7:19. Like they were still at the hospital eating dinner. And our families were so shocked. It was pretty funny because, you know, they just left the room. They like,
yeah,
had literally just walked out. And so, you know, the kids got to come in and meet her and then go out and tell everybody it was a girl and tell everybody her name, you know, just all those sweet moments that I wanted so badly that I just didn't, it didn't work the way I thought. You know, we didn't have time to change them into their cute outfits that said,
yeah,
you know, because they weren't there for very long, but
yeah,
it really did. Like everything worked. And even though the doctor who we spent all this time with wasn't even there for the delivery, we really did need him. It was okay.
Yeah.
It is, you know, anytime you have a birth, I would be shocked to hear anyone say it went exactly like they planned. You know, like there's always some sort of surprise or variation, whether better or worse, you know, but it was a little bit of a processing time just to, you know, oh my goodness, like what happened? We were just at home, you know, I was still in my sweaty workout clothes from that morning. I took a HIIT class at the gym at 9 o'clock that morning and I knew we were going to be working on our house, you know, the other house to get everything ready. So I just never changed. Like I was still in sweaty workout clothes.
Yeah.
It was just the most wild thing. But I've said, you know, if I weren't group B positive, we would not have left the hospital until things got intense and we would have had a baby in the car, you know?
Yeah, you would have.
I could have made all of it at home until, you know, till that 7 o'clock struck. And then I was like, okay, we're done, you know? But so that was such a blessing. And, you know, we had to stay for 48 hours after because I only had an antibiotic for less than 2 hours. And you have to have it for at least 4 before technically that's, you know, allowed or whatever by the hospital policy. So we could have either given baby girl an antibiotic or we could have just stayed for 48 hours. We're like, fine, we'll stay. But we were getting to go home on Easter Sunday and it was so sweet. And, you know, the kids got to be up there a lot and there were just some sweet memories, even with that, you know, we weren't expecting. So some things do work out, you know, those being upset about the group B ended up being fine.
Being just fine.
It was just fine. In fact, it would have not been fine if it weren't for that. Or definitely not as much fun. So yeah, it was wild. And honestly, you know, I've told several friends who've had VBAC since then or at the same time. Honestly, like from the time I went into labor, I don't think I thought about a C-section. It never really crossed my mind. And again, it might have been because I had the experience of going to a hospital and having a vaginal birth, you know, before. So that was not a foreign concept or like feeling or, you know, but I really never thought about it again. And I think some of it could have been that, but also just like the faith I had in myself and all the things that I'd done, all the, you know, the sitting and the exercise during, you know, pregnancy to be ready for all of that and the way that I prepared, and then also just the faith I had in the people around me, like knowing I had a doula, knowing I had an OB who was like cheering me on and literally told me one of my appointments when I explained like the situation, he said, "We're not going to talk about a VBAC again. I'll see you when it's time to have a baby." Like having those people in my corner. I never worry.
Yeah. I really think that it comes with confidence. And people talk about, like, how do you not just worry about it? How do you not focus on it? And it's weird to explain that when you get into that labor spot, you are just focused on the here and the now. Yes. And mentally, if we are confident in our team, confident from our education, and know that what we're doing is just having a baby, just like everybody else, right? Even though we have this title that's hanging over us, it's just having a baby. It has to come with confidence. And when you have confidence, it doesn't loom over you and your thoughts aren't filled with static, you know?
Yes, absolutely. It is nice to feel, you know, confident in that. And honestly, I was more confident in this labor than I was in previous ones. You know, the first one, you don't know anything. You don't know what you don't know. Yeah. Especially, you know, if you haven't researched it or spent time preparing for that. And I hadn't. And I do feel like I felt a lot less confident going into it than this one, even though it was the only one where I was, you know, this was my first VBAC birth and where there was something like on the line, I guess you could say. And, you know, the first time that I've been in, I guess with my first, I was technically high risk, but that was a little different. But, you know, it was just nice to feel confident in my team and to know that I was being looked after, you know, and that I didn't feel like I was on the defensive. You know, I wasn't fighting these people. And like my nurse that I've mentioned, like she was just the sweetest little angel. Like she was on my team. This doctor, because of, you know, he kind of has this reputation, nurses a lot of times will pick his patients or not pick his patients if that's not your thing. So she was very excited that I was one of his patients and that I was a VBAC. And so that made me feel good knowing that she picked me on the floor, you know, when she got there. She's like, I want her. Like, I want to have her. And, you know, that's a huge thing too, that I feel like sometimes goes untalked about because it's the thing you have the least control over. But the nurses that you have make such a huge difference if they'll pull some strings or I'm not going to look if you eat that or, you know, like those kinds of people.
Yeah.
Difference.
Yeah, it really does. And again, it's that whole team feeling, the support. And there's lots of things about your story where I'm like, you had all your family, you got your cup filled there, right? Yes. You got all the love and they were just pouring it on you. You had those cute moments with your kids, all of those things. Then they left and you're like, your body was like, all right, it's time. Let's do this. I feel safe. I feel supported. I feel loved. I feel confident.
Yes.
Let's do this. And it did.
That's the things too. Like people talk about, you know, if you don't feel safe in your environment, and I know and understand 100% how hospitals get like a reputation of making your body not feel safe or making, you know, making people shut down. Like I absolutely get that. And I think that it's especially depending on your circumstance or where you are, but I also, you know, for us, like home birth wasn't an option because we don't have a hospital with a NICU within an hour of us, you know? So like that kind of made me a little weary. Like for me, that was kind of I didn't want that, you know? And I feel like a lot of the stuff that I was like reading a lot of times was so negative towards hospital birth, you know, and I don't know. And it's not for everybody. And like in a different world, had this baby not been VBAC, I probably would have done that. I would have absolutely loved to have a home birth, but you know, it wasn't something that I was comfortable with my personal circumstances, but I did feel like I had a safe experience and like a family experience, even in a hospital.
Mm-hmm. You know,
sometimes, and it does depend on where you are and who's around, but
yeah,
you know, it felt like kind of like the birth center situation of just everybody's there, you know, like
out,
and nobody really told me what to do or not to do. And I think it also comes with the confidence of being a multi-mom, you know, like this is my fourth kid. And I think there's a little bit of confidence in myself and in the fact of like, I've done this before, like, please don't tell me, what to do, you know, and not being hateful or rude, but I think people also understand that, and nurses understand that, and doctors understand that, and put, mm-hmm. you know, a little bit more faith than you just did to take care of it yourself. You know, like, I can do this. And we had one nurse earlier in the night who I couldn't wait till she came in the next morning and found out how quick that baby was born, because she left right before. But she, you know, she told me when I came in, she was like, now, if you don't want an epidural, don't wait too long, because right now you're probably already, you know, she was just showing, pointing pictures at me on the chart, you know, like, mm-hmm. you're probably right here. Don't wait till you're right here, because, you know, you've got a long night ahead and blah, 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 blah.
Oh, geez.
And the other nurse was kind of rolling my eyes at her. And I was like, man, I cannot wait for her to come in tomorrow and find out that I had a baby like 30 minutes after that.
Yeah.
Cannot wait. But other than her and the sweet little baby residents who didn't know what they were doing or who were uncomfortable with what I was doing, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, I felt like I had a great group around me. And even though, you know, somebody to talk for me, you know, to step in. And that's what's so great about like doulas and, you know, and just a great supportive team to have people who will say, you know, we're good. We've got the expertise to handle this. It's okay. Like we can do it. We don't need you right now. We're good. Like a mom is a complete birth team sometimes, you know, like that's all that you need is just the mom and her baby. And, but it was such a healing experience just to feel like, for one thing, that you did it, you know, it's, you spent 9 months thinking about it and preparing for me that, you know, 2.5 years thinking about what it would be like to have a different experience. And, you know, to know that it did take work. It did take driving further. It did take prep and planning and all of these things. And for it to happen, and just like, oh, the relief that comes with that. And, you know, it was special for me with it being a girl. And I might've felt the same way. I don't know. But when my husband was like, it's a girl, I was like, of course it is. Like, we did this together. Like, of course this is a girl. Like, I don't know. It made me feel so good and so strong. And like that this, just this team, like me and this little baby girl got this done. We're together. Of course it's a girl. Like, of course we did this.
I love that. Of course. Yeah, you and that baby girl, you were strong and fast and furious and all of the things and achieved a very different and beautiful experience.
Yes.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing your journeys.
Thank you for letting me. This has been wonderful.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hey everybody, I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.